Sermon 16 Human Power Defeated. The stout-hearted are spoiled, they have slept their sleep. And none of the men of might have found their hands. Psalm 76:5. The common circumstances of the psalm, concerning the penman, title, and the like, I shall not at all inquire after. The time of its being given to the church is alone to us considerable. And yet all the knowledge thereof, also, is but conjectural. What particular time it was wherein it was given we know not. But that it was given for the use of all times, that we know. Probable it is, from verse 3, that it was established as a monument of praise in the days of Hezekiah, when, by the immediate hand of God, Jerusalem was delivered from the army of Sennacherib. For a return of which mercy though good Hezekiah came short of the obligation laid on him, rendering not again according to the benefit done unto him, yet the Lord himself takes care for his own glory, setting forth the sum as a monument of the praise due to his name unto all generations. The deliverance of Jerusalem, then, from so great ruin as that impending over it from the threatening army of Sennacherib under their walls, being the occasion of penning this psalm, it cannot but yield us a meet foundation of making mention of the name of the Lord in a suitable work this day. In general the whole is eucharistical, and hath two parts, first, narratory, concerning the work of God for his people. Secondly, laudatory, or the praise of his people for those works. The first part hath three particulars, 1. An exordium, by way of exultation and rejoicing, verses 1, 2. 2. A special narration of the work of God, for which the praise of the whole is intended, verses 3, 5, 6. 3. An apostrophe to the Lord concerning the one and the other, verse 4. The latter containeth, 1. A doctrinal observation for the use of the church, from the whole, verse 7. 2. The reasons and confirmation of the doctrine so laid down, taken from the power and righteousness of God and the actions recounted, verses 8, 9. 3. A threefold use of the doctrine so confirmed, of instruction, verse 10. Of exhortation, verse 11. Of establishment and consolation, verse 12. The particulars, preceding my text, I shall a little touch upon, that the mind of the Holy Ghost therein may be the more clear unto you, and the doctrine from thence appear with the greater evidence. 1. In the exordium, verses 1, 2, you have two things, 1. The names of the place wherein the work mentioned was wrought and the praise return held forth. And these are, Judah, Israel, Salem, Zion 2. The relation of God unto this place, which lies at the bottom of the work he did for them and the praise they returned unto him. He was known, his name was great amongst them. There was his tabernacle and his dwelling place which may be referred to two heads. The knowledge of his will, verse 1. And the establishment of his worship, verse 2. 1. For the description of the place, by its several names titles, I shall not insist upon it. They are all but various expressions of the same thing. It is the church of God that is adorned with all these titles and names of singular endearment, Judah, that single tribe of which the Messiah was to come. Israel, a prevailing people, the posterity of him that prevailed with God. Salem, the place he chose above all the places of the earth to settle his name therein. And Zion, the choice ornament of that Salem, a model wherein the beauty and excellency of all the other are contracted, whose gates were then so dear unto the Lord. Or perhaps you have the distribution of the whole into its several parts. Judah, the governing tribe. Israel, the body of the people. Salem, the chief place of their residence and glory. And Zion, the presence of God in his worship amongst them all. Now, the mention of these titles of the church, so dear to the Lord, doth front the following narration, to afford us this observation. Observation. The care of Salem, of Zion, lies at the bottom of all God's powerful actings and workings among the sons of men. Every mighty work of God throughout the world may be prefaced with these two verses. The whole course of affairs in the world is steered by providence in reference to the good of Salem. Zion hath been the rise and downfall of all the powers of the world. It is her deliverance or trial that is intended in their raising, and her recompense and vengeance in their ruin. God works not among the nations for their own sakes. When they are sifted with a sieve, they are but the chaff. Israel is the corn for whose sake it is done, whereof not the least grain shall fall to the ground, Amos 9:9. She is precious in God's sight and honorable. He loves her, therefore he giveth men for her, and people for her life, Isaiah 43:4. The men of the world are very apt to pride themselves in their thoughts, as though great were their share and interest in the glorious things that God is accomplishing, like a fly that sat on the chariot wheel, and cried, "What a dust have I raised round about!" The truth is, their names are written in the dust, and they are of no account in the eyes of the Lord in all he is accomplishing, but only to exalt his name in their miscarriage and destruction. Was it not in the thoughts of some lately amongst us, that their right hand had accomplished the work of the Lord, and that the end of it must be the satisfaction of their lusts? And hath not the Lord declared that they have neither part nor lot in this matter? It was Salem, not self, Zion, not Babylon or confusion, that lay at the bottom of the whole. 2. There is a relation of God unto this place. His will was known there, verse 1. And his worship was established, verse 2. And these also have their particular mention. Observation. In the deliverance of his people, God hath a special regard to the honor of his ordinances. Why so great things for Salem? Why, there his word is preached, whereby his will is known and his name made great. There his tabernacle is fixed, and his dwelling place established. There he gives his presence in his worship and ordinances, wherein he is delighted. Because of thy temple at Jerusalem shall kings bring presents unto thee, Psalm 68:29. Here is the temple, Christ, and then, the worship of Christ for their sake it shall be done. When vengeance is recompensed upon an opposing people, it is the vengeance of the temple, Jeremiah 50:28. And it is a voice from thence that rendereth recompense to his enemies, Isaiah 66:6. The great work which the Lord at this day is accomplishing in the world looks fully on this one thing. Wherefore is it that God shaketh the powers of this world, and causeth the towers to totter which they uphold? Is it not that the way of his worship may be vindicated from all their abominations, and vengeance taken upon them for their opposition thereunto? And there is no greater sign of God's care for a people, than when he shows a regard to his ordinances among that people. The defense he gives is of the glory of the assemblies of Mount Zion, Isaiah 4:5. When the ark departs, you may call the children, Ichabod. The taking away of his candlestick, the removal of his glory from the temple, is an assured prologue to the utter ruin of a people. And hath not the Lord had a special eye this way in the late deliverance? It is his promise, that he will purge the rebels from amongst his people. And he hath done it. Were there not children of Edom amongst them, who cried, down with them even to the ground? Hath not God magnified his despised word above all his name? Was it not as an offscouring to many particular persons among them in the late murmuring for preeminence against those whom the Lord hath chosen? Who, I suppose, have no other joy in their employment than Moses had in his, who once desired the Lord to slay him, that he might be freed from his burden. Only the will of the Lord and the good of a poor thankless people swayed their hearts unto it. And were there here any more discriminating rods cast in before the Lord, to have that bud and spring which he owned as number 17 than this one scripture, or no scripture? Solemn worship, or none at all? I speak only as to some particulars, and that I can upon my own experience. The Lord give their hearts a free discovery of his thoughts in this business. Doubtless he hath had respect to his tabernacle and dwelling place. For my part, they are to me as the Theban shield. And, notwithstanding all my pressures, I would labor to say, as Mephibosheth, let all go, since I see the king in peace. I might farther observe, from both these things together, that among the people of God alone is the residence of his glorious presence. This song is held out from Zion. In his temple doth everyone speak of his glory, Psalm 29:9. Bless ye God in the congregations, the Lord, from the fountain of Israel, Psalm 68:26. Praise waiteth for thee, O God, in Shin, Psalm 65:1. As a lame leg, and as a thorn in the hand, ungraceful, painful, so is a parable in the mouth of fools, Proverbs 26:7, 9. It is the saints who are bid to be joyful in the Lord. And the high praises of God must be in their mouths. Psalm 149:5-6. They are high things that beseem only those whom God doth magnify. If the Lord give us matter of praise, pray know from whom it will be acceptable, whose praises they are he delighteth to inhabit. If you have some defiling lust, the sunshine of mercies will exhale nothing but the offensive steam of carnal affections. The sacrifices of wicked hearts are an abomination to the Lord. If your fleshly affections work this day, without the beatings of a pure heart, and the language of a pure lip, the Lord will reject your oblations. Would you have your praise as sweet to the Lord as a mercy is to you? Be assured that in Christ you are the Israel of God, and your prayers shall prevail, your praise shall be accepted too. The second particular, as I observed, is a special narration of the works of God, for which the whole is intended, verses 3, 5, 6. And therein you have these two things, 1. The place where these acts were wrought and are remembered, there, verse 3. 2. The acts themselves related, which refer, 1. To God the worker, verse 3, he break. 2. To the persons on whom they were wrought, verses 5, 6. 1. The place where these things were acted and the monuments of them erected, that is, there. There, in Salem and Zion, Judah and Israel. There, not so much in those places, as with reference unto them. Observation. All the mighty actings of God regard His church. And there are the monuments and trophies of His victories against His enemies erected. To the first part of this I spake before. A word for the latter, God decketh and maketh Zion glorious with the spoils of His adversaries. There the glory of Pharaoh and all his host, drowned in the Red Sea, is dedicated, Exodus 15. There are the shields of all the mighty men in the host of Sennacherib, slain by an angel, hung up, Isaiah 37:35-36. There is the honor, the robes, the crown, and the reason of Nebuchadnezzar laid up, for the glory of Zion, Daniel 4:33-34, himself being changed into a beast. There is all the pomp and glory of Herod deposited, Acts 12:23, when, as a reward of his pride and persecution, he was devoured of worms. There is the glory of all persecutors, with the blood of Julian in a special manner, who threw it into the air, and cried, "Vis is the gallows." There Haman is visibly exalted upon the gallows by himself erected for the ruin of a prince of the people, Esther 7:10. There the peace and the joy of the church, their choice frame under the bloody massacres of the inhabitants of Zion, is set to show, for the glory of it. There all the rochets of popish prelates, the crowns, and glory, and thrones of the kings of the earth, all set apart as monuments and trophies of God's victories in Zion. There is a place reserved for the man of sin, and all the kings of the earth who have committed fornication with the mother of harlots, whose destruction sleepeth not. God will at length certainly glorify Salem with the arrow of the bow, the shield, the sword, and all spoils of its oppressors. 2. There is what he did describe, both immediately in the actions themselves, verse 3, and with reference to the persons towards whom he so acted, verse 5. Now, because the former is fully contained in the latter, I shall not handle it apart, but descend immediately to the consideration of the words of my text, being a declaration of what the Lord hath done for his people in the day of their distress, with particular reference to the cause of that distress. And here we shall look a little, 1. To the reading of the words. And, 2. To their explication. 1. To the reading the stout-hearted, or, the strong in heart, the mighty in heart, so in the original. Men of stout, stubborn, unpersuadable hearts and courage, whose epithet is, that they are far from righteousness, Isaiah 46:12. The Septuagint have rendered it, asintoiti cardia, the, foolish in heart. Stubborn-hearted men are foolish-hearted men. Not to yield unto, is worse than not to understand, what is good. They are spoiled, SHT plus UW plus L plus L plus W plus U, have yielded themselves to the spoil. So properly, and so rendered by most interpreters. Which sense I shall follow? They have slept their sleep, N plus O M plus W plus U, dormant, they have slumbered their sleep. What it is to slumber asleep we shall see afterward. The residue of the words are literally rendered, save only in the placing of the negation. For whereas we set it on the persons, none of the men, in the original it is upon the act, have not found. Affirming concerning the persons, all the men of might have not, that is, none of the men of might have a very frequent Hebraism, imitated by John 1 Epist. 3:15, pa anthropoctonos aukachazon, every man slayer hath not life, that is, none hath. And so you have the words, the stout of heart have yielded themselves to the spoil, they have slumbered their sleep. And none of the men of might have found their hands. 2. The words thus read contain three general heads. 1. A twofold description of the enemies of Salem. 1. In respect of their internal affections they were stout of heart, men of high spirit and hearty courage, chedir nescientes, not knowing how to yield to anything but the dictates of their own proud spirits. 2. In respect of their power for outward acting men of might. Strong of hand, as well as stout of heart. Courage without strength will but betray its possessor. And strength without courage is but a noodle pontus, a burdensome nothing but when both meet, a stout heart and strong hands, who shall stand before them? Thus you have the enemy set out like Goliath, with a spear and helmet, defying the host of the living God. 2. You have a twofold issue of God's providence in dealing with them, suitably to this their double qualification. 1. He opposeth himself to the stoutness of their hearts, and they yield themselves to the spoil. Where observe, first, the act itself they yield themselves. Nothing in the world so contrary to a stout heart is to yield itself. To yield is a thing of the greatest distance and contrariety to the principle of a stout heart in the world. It is far more reconcilable to death and yielding. But this God will effect. Secondly, the extent of this yielding it was to the spoil. This exceedingly heightens the mighty working of the Lord against them. Should they be brought to yield to reason, persuasion, and union, it were well. But that they should be so prevailed on as to yield to the spoil, that is, to the mercy of those against whom they rose and opposed themselves, this is digitous day. 2. He opposeth himself to their actual might they found not their hands. Hands are the instruments of acting the heart's resolution. The strength and power of a man is in his hands. If they be gone, all his hope is gone. If a man's sword be taken from him, he will do what he can with his hands. But if his hands be gone, he may go to sleep, for any disturbance he will work. For men not to find their hands, is not to have that power for the execution of their designs which formerly they had. In former days they had hands, power for doing great things. But now, when they would use them against Salem, they could not find them. And why so? God had taken them away. God took away their power, their strength departed from them. Samson found not his strength when his locks were cut. Though he thought to do as at other times, yet he was deceived, and taken. When God takes away men's power, they go forth, and think to do as in former days. But when they come to exercise it, all is gone, their hands are laid out of the way, in allusion to one that seeketh. 3. There is the total issue of this whole dispensation, placed in the midst of both, as arising from both they have slumbered their sleep. When their hearts yielded, and their hands were lost, courage and power both taken away, what else should they do? Some take this for an expression of death, as it is sometimes used, Psalm 13:3, lighten mine eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. I rather conceive it to hold out that condition which God threateneth to bring upon the enemies of his people, when he sends them a spirit of slumber, Romans 11:8. Now, in such a condition two things are imminent. 1. Its weakness. A condition of slumber and sleep is a weak condition. A sleeping man is able to do nothing. Jail can destroy a drowsy Sisera. 2. Its vanity. Men in their sleep are apt to have foolish, vain fancies. This, then, is that which the Lord holds out concerning the enemies of his church, his people, his ways. When their hearts are gone and their hands gone, they shall be brought to a condition of weakness in respect of others. They shall not be able to beat them and the vanity in themselves. They shall feed themselves with vain thoughts, like the dream of a hungry man, Isaiah 29:8, he dreameth, and, behold, he eateth. He waketh, and, behold, he is empty. They pleased themselves for a little season with strong apprehensions of the accomplishment of their heart's lusts and cobweb fancies. But the issue is shame and disappointment. The words, being opened, will yield us these three observations. 1. Men of stout hearts and strong hands, of courage and power, are often engaged against the Lord. 2. God suits the workings of providence for deliverance to the qualifications and actings of his opposers. Their stout hearts shall yield, their strong hands be lost. 3. Though men have courage, might, and success, yet when they engage themselves against the Lord, weakness and vanity shall be the issue thereof. In the brief handling whereof I hope you shall find the word of God and the works of God exceedingly suited. 1. Men of courage, power, and success, of eminent qualifications, are oftentimes engaged against the Lord and the ways of the Lord. I shall multiply neither testimonies nor instances of this truth. For that were but to set up a candle in the sun. The experience of all ages has made it good. 1 or 2 places may suffice. Psalm 68:30, rebuke the company of spearmen, the multitude of the bulls, with the calves of the people. There are not only calves of the people, easily deluded, sottish men, but also multitudes of bulls, heady, high-minded, bearing down all before them, throwing up all bounds and fences, laying all common to their lusts, not easily to be resisted. These also are amongst the adversaries of the ways of the Lord. The first open opposers of the ways of God were giants, mighty men, and men of renown, Genesis 6:4. At once 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, and men of renown, joined themselves in rebellion against the Lord, Numbers 16:2. And that 1. Because these very qualifications, of a stout heart, strong hands, and former success, are apt of themselves, if destitute of directing light and humbling grace, to puff up the spirits of men, and to engage them in ways of their own, contrary to the mind of the Lord. When men take advice of their stout hearts, strong hands, and former success, they are very evil counselors. When Jeremiah advised the Jews from the Lord for their good, the proud men answered, they would not obey, Jeremiah 43:2. When Pharaoh is made stout for his ruin, he cries, who is the Lord, that I should obey his voice? Exodus 5:2. And for success, God makes the Assyrian the rod of his anger, sends him against the people of his wrath, with charge to take the spoil, and to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets, Isaiah 10:6. He goeth, accordingly, and prospereth. But when he hath so done, see what a conclusion he makes. He goes against Jerusalem, and cries, let not your God deceive you. Have the gods of the nations delivered them? And do you think so to be? Isaiah 37:10, 12. From the success he had from God, he concluded the success he should have against him. Like those of late amongst ourselves, who having been partners with others in former successes, whilst they went upon the command of God, doubtless received in their stout hearts establishment and strengthening to other undertakings. As if the God of the Parliament could not help. Amaziah, king of Judah, wages war with Edom, and they are destroyed before him, 2 Kings 14:7. The war was of the Lord. Upon this he is lifted up, and causelessly provoketh Jehush, king of Israel, verse 8, against the mind and will of God. Jehush sends him word, that if the thistle pride itself against the cedar, the wild beast will tread it down, verse 9. But he had former success, and on he will go to his ruin. The stout-hearted man for a delivery from whose fury and folly we desire the state to lift up the name of the Lord having received help and assistance against Edom, will needs lift up the thistle against the cedar, act out of their own sphere, turn subjection into dominion, to their shame and sorrow. But it were better their hearts should be filled with sorrow, than the nation, and especially the people of God in the nation, with blood and confusion, ending in bondage and tyranny. And this is the first account of it, why men of such qualifications are engaged against the Lord. The qualifications themselves do set up for it. if destitute of divine light and humbling grace. Such men will run upon God, and the thick bosses of his buckler. 2. God will have it so, that the greater may be his glory in the powerful protection and defense of his own, with the destruction, disappointment, and ruin of their enemies. If his enemies were all sottish, weak, foolish, childish, until he makes them so, where would be the praise of his great name? When would there be notus deo vindus dignus, work worthy of the appearance of the Most High? But when there is a great mountain before Zerubbabel Zech 4:7, a high, hearty, oppressing empire, to level that to a plain is glorious. When God will get himself a name, he raises up, not a poor, effeminate Sardanapalus, a poor, sensual, hypocritical wretch, as some have been. The Lord will not make an open contest by such a one, such as some of our sore oppressors have been, but he will raise up a Pharaoh, a crooked Leviathan, a stout-hearted, cunning-headed, strong-handed oppressor. And he tells him such a one as he, for this cause have I raised thee up, for to show in thee my power. And that my name may be declared throughout all the earth, Exodus 9:16. Thou art a fit subject, saith he, for me to exalt my glory in thy ruin. The beast is to make war with the lamb. And he shall not do it alone, God will give him in assistance. And who shall these be? Women, and children, and weak ones? No. He will put it into the heart of the kings of the earth to give their power and strength to the beast, Rev 17:17, to break them in pieces. This will be glory indeed. All the opposers which formerly have risen, or at least most of them, have had the power to that height, as they have been exceedingly above all outwardly appearing means of being resisted. The breaking of the old monarchies and the papal power is a work meet for the Lord. And in the shall mainly consist the promised glory of the Church of Christ in after days, whose morning star, I doubt not, is now upon us. The Lord will more immediately and visibly break the high, stout, haughty ones of the earth, for the sake of his people, than in former times. Look upon all the glorious things that are spoken concerning Zion in the latter days, and you shall find them all interwoven with the still, the shaking of heaven, the casting down of thrones, and dominions, and mighty ones. I mention this, because indeed I look upon this late mercy as the after drops of a former refreshing shower, as an appendix of goodwill, for the confirming the former work which God had wrought. Though, saith he, ye have lain among the pots, have been in a poor, deaf old condition, a condition of bondage, yet shall ye be as the wings of a dove covered with silver, and her feathers with yellow gold, ye shall be made exceeding glorious. But how or when shall this be? Why? When the Almighty scattereth kings for her sake, then shall she be as white as snow and salmon, Psalm 68:13, 14. When God by his almighty power takes away so great opposers, then glory and beauty shall arise upon you. And this, in some degree, lies also at the bottom of the late dispensation of providence. Men's hearts were full of fear of a storm. Yea, a storm was necessary, that some evidence might be given of the Lord's continuing his presence amongst you, that if hereafter we be forsaken, it may appear that it was for our own unbelief, unthankfulness, and folly, and not for doing the work of the Lord. Now, how was this expected? Why, this poor people, or that, and acquainted with the things of their peace, will rise and make opposition. No, saith the Lord, you shall not have so easy a trial. You shall have men of stout hearts and strong hands, with many former successes on their shoulders. That, when deliverance is given in, my name may be glorious indeed. Use 1. Be not moved at the most formidable enemies that may arise against you in the ways of God. It was told the house of David, saying, Syria is confederate with Ephraim. And his heart was moved, and the heart of his people, as the trees of the wood are moved with the wind, Isaiah 7:2. When strong combinations arise, how apt are we to shake and tremble before them, especially when they have some strangeness as well as strength? That Syria should come against Judah, is no wonder. But what, I pray, makes Ephraim too, their brother, and fellow in former afflictions? Besides, Syria and Ephraim are always at a mortal difference among themselves. But they who agree in nothing else usually consent in opposition to the ways of God. Then you shall have Edom, Ammon, Amalek, and Asher altogether of one mind, Psalm 88:6-8. And the kings of the west, that perpetually devour one another, yet have one mind in exalting the beast and opposing the lamb, Rev 17:14. As, in our late troubles, there was a concurrence not only in the main of Syria and Ephraim, the two grand extremes, but also of innumerable particular fancies and designs. So that if a man should have met them, like him in the fable, the lion, the ass, and the fox, he could not but wonder quoiter unfacerit, whether they were traveling together. But, I say, when such combinations are made, how apt are we to shake and tremble? They are stout men, valiant men. And perhaps Ahithophel